Hello, friends. Welcome to the Neighborhood Church Podcast. You can go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org to get more information on how you can get even better connected. Have a good and beautiful day.
We are continuing our series called For the Bible Tells Me So, which has been, I love it. I love talking about the stories in the Bible and like what's underneath, because if you are new to the Bible or even reading the Bible for a long time, the Bible is anything but really clear and easy and simple. It is very, very, very messy, which I love because life, including me, can be very, very complicated and messy, which then leads us to Name of the Wind, my favorite book. Anyone else read Name of the Wind? All right? Is there anyone? It's just my favorite. One person's very excited. She's jumping up and down, right? The whole premise of the Name of the Wind is that everything has a name. And if you learn the true name of something, then you have power over that. So if you knew the name of the wind, right, then you have control and power over the wind. And words and naming things have a lot of power because we attribute words to things from our life experiences, how we see the world, how we see the divine, how we see food, how we see one another is going to shape how we show up and how we speak to it. So like grandparents, if you're here and you're a healthy individual, you called your grandparents grandma and grandpa, all right? And other unhealthy people called them Nana and Papa, all right? That's just a shot, just a joke, right? Wade's offended, like, wait a second, Grandpa Poof Poof is awesome. So, right? And you give names to those based on your family's history, that what your parents called their parents, and it's going to shape. So, like, my mom wanted to be called Grandy, all right? Because it's really cute and warm and fuzzy. And then my dad's like, well, what are they going to call me, right? So we came up with a couple, and we came up with, not Poof Poof, no, it was not Poof Poof. It was Grandpa Sling, right? Because it just sounded like, hey, what's up, guys? Grandpa Sling is here, right? Like he's running some sort of, like, backroom gambling table, so, right? And, like, there's all sorts of names because how those names have a special meaning to you. They have a personal trait. And I have a friend who does this very, very well. The way that, like, I see the world and how I see things, she sees them completely differently. And she has words to speak to those different experiences. And so I remember we were at the dinner table, and I think we're having spaghetti or something. And I said, "Do you have any Parmesan cheese? You know, like the stuff in the can, you know, like?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, you mean sprinkle cheese?" And I'm like, I'm in a psychopath's home right now. I better get out of here. I'm like, sprinkle cheese? He's like, yeah, you know, because you pick it up and you sprinkle it on your food. See, the way that she views the world is very practical. She does not take a card, right? She pulls a card. I'm like, it's your turn. She's like, oh, have I pulled my card yet? I'm like, what are you talking about, right? Because everything, the function of it is how she speaks the words to it. And the best one is we're in Boulder. I think we're in Boulder, Colorado. We're at some Mediterranean restaurant. And she ordered some lamb. And the server says, well, how would you like that cooked? And the way that, she sees the world differently, she doesn't want to think of the lamb as being, like, well, more bloody. I want it as bloody as possible, like rare. Most of us would say rare, medium rare, fully cooked. And so she stopped and she looked, paused for it, and she goes, I guess I'd like it soft. We died. It was so funny, right? But it's so true. How you view a lamb, how you view your grandparents, how you view the divine is going to shape how you speak to it. And that's what we're talking about today, is the she who named God. There's a story of a woman named Hagar, and she's the first to name God, to give a personal name to this God. And God has all sorts of names throughout the Bible, right? There's Jehovah Jireh. Like I say often, and maybe some of you have always wondered, I had a lot of people at first like, what are you getting at? We refer to God as the divine. So I want to pause just like for a second. I've never actually taken time to explain this on stage. Is why do you say divine? Are you trying to like skim under some other thing? No, here's the divine. Is that even calling God, God, you're attributing some sort of name or meaning to that. And we can have, in the story of the Bible, there's all sorts of gods. Throughout the history, there's all sorts of things that we give God-like ascendance to. And you can't name something that can't be named, right? Calling Hosanna or Jehovah Jireh, it's just still a name, or like today it's Beer Leroy High, right? Beer High Leroy, the name. Anyways, we'll get to that. So like any name to it is going to be from my experience and attached to this God, but like still God can't be named. And the divine, for at least for me, like transcends, goes to the mystery part of it, the mystic part of it, that there's more width and depth to this God that I could ever hope to name. And so just saying divine just leaves it like so much bigger. And for whatever reason, I heard someone say that and it just felt true. It felt right. Like, yeah, I'm fine with giving names. Like throughout the Bible, they call God a he because it's a patriarchal society. But God's pronoun is not he. God's pronoun is not she. God's pronoun is God. That's in the fullness of humanity of a male and a female is that's who God is. And so we can use these words and interchange them, and it's okay. It's okay for someone to call God she, right? Like in Proverbs, wisdom is considered the feminine part of God. Like there's no threat. And for some people, that feels very threatening. Here's the thing. Whatever brings you joy, whatever brings you life of how you call this divine, whatever you want to call it. Like people, I've been around where in a movement where people would say often like Papa, they call God Papa because Jesus called God Abba, right? It's like a similar word. People call Father or Brother or whatever it is. Here's the thing. Don't get hung up on the word specifically. Get hung up on, am I connecting with this good and beautiful God? And we see this is where the first person to give a personal name to God. And I still remember I heard a message where they were talking about this, and it was like this went off in my head of how you can read something over and over and over again, how you can hear something over and over again, and when you could take a step back and just see what's underneath the surface, kind of like what's in the air, that there is this God that's so much bigger than I ever thought possible. And we find the story in Genesis chapter 16. And I'm going to read. I don't know if it's up on the screen or not, but I'm going to read through it, and this is through the NIV. Now, Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her." That's a great way to start a story, isn't it? Going to the slave, "Hey, go sleep with my husband. You're welcome." So Abram agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarah said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." "Your slave is in your hands," Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think is best." Then Sarah mistreated Hagar so that she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, slave of Sarah, where have you come from, and where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress, Sarah," she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count." Verse 11. The angel of the Lord said to her, "You are now pregnant, and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your misery. You'll be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility towards all his brothers." She gave him this name. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. "You are the God who sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." That is where the well called Beer Lahai Roy is still there between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abram a son. Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar born him Ishmael. That is old to be a dad. So that is the word of the Lord, friends. And where we start is there is a perspective how you see things, but also how you are seen. And let's just like, maybe you're here and you're like, is he going to talk about this? Like, first off, mistreated, right? Sarah mistreated. This is like abused. This is slap around. This is like emotional, spiritual, physical, sexual, whatever you want. It's like they kind of soften a little bit. Like the word here at the fullness of it is like do horrible things to her. So she leaves, which we're going to talk a little bit, but here's the part that's odd. And if you're following at home, is that God tells her to go back. This is where the Bible gets messy. This is where the Bible doesn't always, it's not always clean. Of she runs away from abuse, then God says, hey, I got a great idea. Why don't you go back to the abuse, right? Wow, thanks, God. That's some really, really great advice. And why? You give all these different answers, all these different theological things of what's going to happen with Ishmael and his brothers and the nations. The truth is the Bible's really messy, right? It is not clean. But what we see here in this story is that Sarah is the most beautiful woman, well, I don't know, on earth. In that little part of town, in that tribe, she is the most beautiful. And Abram seeks her out, and there's a beautiful story how that all happens. But she has value, especially in this culture, she has value because of two things. She's gorgeous, right? And then she can give birth, hopefully to a son. Because God gave Abram this promise. We talked about it last week of like, through you, we're going to be blessing to all nations, right? And through your sons and descendants, there are going to be so many. Like, you're going to just like, it's going to change everything. The promise is through that Sarah could have a son. Sarah just finds out that she can't get pregnant, right? And so she's like, well, if the blessing is going to come and my value is through, I'm beautiful, and my value is that there's going to be this blessing from this new God, the divine, and through our lineage, through our line, we're going to have even more blessings. Sarah takes it upon herself and saying, let's make it happen, right? Because if the way that you view that you have value, if the only way you have worth is through your appearance, right? And we don't do that at all today. No, we're so woke and we're above that, right? If your value and even like your blessing from God is through that you can produce a kid, you're going to pretty much do whatever you can to keep that value, because the way that Sarah's being seen and her value is through how the world sees her, right? So she cuts a corner and she has this slave from Egypt, Hagar, and says, all right, now you sleep with my husband, because then if we get this kid thing going, we're going to get more blessing from God. So let's just make this happen. She's an activator like me. Let's get it done, right? And what happens then is that when Hagar gets pregnant, the way that Hagar views herself is, I'm just a slave. And Hagar does exactly what she's told to do, as what slaves did. They didn't have too many options, right? She was like, hey, you're going to go, you know, conceive this kid with my husband. Hagar's not going to like, well, you know, let's get like a dream board going, right? And let's weigh all our options. Let's do a pro, con kind of thing. It wasn't like that. She didn't have a voice. It was like jump and how high should I jump? It's just how it worked. But Hagar, when she finds out she's pregnant, all of a sudden, she sees the world differently. She sees Sarah differently. Of like, whoa, 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 whoa. If you don't have this child, but I do, I have some power. You can imagine her shoulders got up a little bit, right? Of like, what was this whole blessing thing? Guess who's holding it? Guess who has now more power? And if Sarah, or I go back, I got some Sarah over here. If Sarah all of a sudden realizes that the slave who's oppressed, who they view as less than, as below, all of a sudden is beginning to ascend a little bit, and her confidence, her swag, whatever you want to call it, starts rising up a little bit, where maybe Hagar can look Sarah in the eyes a little bit. Sarah all of a sudden sees it as a threat. And it's interesting. It was her idea for Hagar to go to Abram. Then she goes to Abram and blames him, right? I was like, you did this to me. And Abram, of course, doesn't say like, come again one more time. This is your idea. He just like backs up. And he's like, I want nothing to do with this, right? Like a lot of men that I know, like, whoa, I don't want to deal with this. And so Sarah then goes and slaps her around, mistreats her around. You know, if you change the word, there's a big difference in like mistreat her. Like, oh, I really don't like your hair today, Chris. Like, and not Chris was mistreated by his friends, right? This is very, very different. To the point, you don't run away when you are a slave and you're pregnant where they were living just because there was like some critical judgment words coming at them, right? She had to flee. But here's the thing, hurt people hurt other people, right? You been here before? Maybe it's the one being hurt or the one hurting other people. Sarah's a mess. And if her value is now being lessened, the thing that she holds onto saying, this is my purpose, this is how I get this blessing from God, is now being taken away from her, she's going to do something about it. And don't we all do the same thing? Like, think about what makes you okay. And you can say, no, Chris, only the kingdom of God is the only thing I find value in. On the word alone is where I find my strength. I'm like, yeah, I'm happy for you, right? Like we have all these things in our life that we build up security. How much retirement money you have, of how your car runs, to how much you weigh, of how fast you can go, of how people will take looks at you as you walk through, whatever, of how many people come to you to ask for advice. How many people like you on Instagram? Whatever it might be, we have these arbitrary things that are not evil in and of themselves, but we can find a light of life in, a lot of life in. Like maybe it's your kids and how they perform. Then all of a sudden they don't perform the way that you want them to perform. They begin to talk back to you. You're like, wait a second, that's not how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to put your shoes on when I tell you to put your shoes on. I'm like, I don't want to put my shoes on. I'm like, what is going on? My world is falling apart, right? And what do you do when that begins to take away from you? You just say, oh, you know, just let go and let God. I'm happy for you. For a lot of us, we react in anger, fear, rage, right? Like there's been countless times of where money I've let define if I am a good dad or I'm a good husband because I have this much money where I can provide these sorts of things for my family. And there's times like all of us where I don't have as much money as I thought I did, right? And that is one of the things that can just cripple me. And it's like, why do I give so much power and meaning to this? Where if it is something goes not how I think, I lose sleep for days. And I react in fear instead of reacting of like, it's going to be okay. And this is what Sarah does. Her people hurt other people. We have to be aware of where our allegiance or where the power or the best of ourselves is tied into. Because if it's not something like the kingdom of God, and I'm never going to get people saying, well, you just got to let go and let God. It's like, it is so complicated, so messy, but we have to continually readjust, say, I'm going to trust in this good and beautiful God. Even as all these things are going on, I'm going to keep leaning towards this God. Because if we don't, then we're going to continue just to hurt other people. Then what happens then? So that's Sarah, how she is seen and how she sees the world. And then there's Hagar. And Hagar's like, I'm out of here. She did everything perfect. She was in the system. And I love this idea. Like she was in the system. Like if you were like the patriarch of the family and then you're Sarah, who's the most beautiful person, and she has all this perceived power, and then Hagar is the slave from Egypt, and so she's traveling with them, she did it right. For all my Enneagrams ones out there, she did it right. I did all the right things, the right time, in the right way, with the right words. And it still wasn't enough. You can imagine, we've been there before, like, no, I did all the right things in this spiritual community. I set up for this class, I did these things, I gave this amount of money, I served these ways, I said all the right words, I stood up, sat down, fight, I did all the right things, and still, it's still not enough. They want more. They're telling me I'm doing it wrong. We do this in family systems. No, I was the perfect daughter, I was the perfect son, I was the good dad. We do it at work, we do it in friendships. And even though you do check all the right boxes, do all the right things, you still get slapped around. You still get isolated. You still get shamed. You still get blamed. And this is Hagar. I did everything you wanted me to and still not enough. So what does she do? Runs to the wilderness. And I love this. This is my favorite part of this story. She runs to the wilderness because whatever the people with the power had, whatever the structure was, whatever the empire had, whatever that organization had, she says, I'm done with this. And she runs away. And she runs into the wild. And it's in the wild, this is interesting, it's in the wild of where God shows up. Because in the wilderness, you're gonna hear me say this like a lot of times, in the wilderness is where what God does best. We have a wild God who does what he does best in the wild. And of all the places for this God to chase and show up, it's here. But here's the thing, all right? This is interesting. There's like a couple takeaways from the story of Hagar. The first is this. This is so good, right? The idea of wilderness throughout the Bible is we see Jesus go in the wilderness. We see the Hebrew people go into the wilderness. We see countless stories of people in the wilderness of where Jesus goes in the wilderness for 40 days to get, you know, however you define it, like get tested, you know, by Satan and all these things. And he comes out of there with his call and his purpose-driven life comes out of the wilderness, right? And in the wilderness that people get these beautiful things. And we love the idea of the wilderness, right? You go into the wilderness through pain, through loneliness, through fear, through rejection, whatever it might be. And we don't like that part, but the wilderness of where we can experience new things with the divine, where we can have new moments of where God can speak to those deep places in our life. But here's how we all want it. We want like a state park wilderness, right? I have to read it. I heard this in a sermon by Barbara Brown Taylor, and she is fabulous. If you want to Google her, she is wonderful. And she talked about, hey, we love the idea of wilderness, but we want it to be like a state park or national park where there's all these really nice, well-worn paths that tell us exactly where to go. And we have state troopers that are there walking around, look all nice, and say, hey, don't go down there. That's a slippery slope. Please stay away from that, friends, all right? And then over here, oh, no, poison ivy's over there. Just redirect you. And we have signs everywhere that tell us everything that we need to know so we don't have to ask any questions. Right? Like, why is that cabin there? Oh, this tells me. And then we can feel really good around and say, slap each other on the back, and they hop in our car and go right back having all the answers and the perfect experience. You can see where everyone has gone through the history of time, have all gone the same direction. And if you begin just to look into the woods a little bit, someone's going to come around and say, it's not safe. Come on. We like that kind of spirituality. But that's not how this God works. You get into the wild. You get into these places where it can be scary. You don't know where everyone else has gone. You don't know where this God is at this point, but you know in this space, this God might be enough. And you discover new things. It's not always simple. It's not always easy. It's not always even safe. But we have a wild God. And it's interesting. So it's not a state park experience. She's in the wilderness, but this God finds her. If you think about it, in stories you've heard about gods, gods go find people for what reasons? Right? To punish? To get back something that these humans stole? To go correct them and tell them how great I am and how bad you are? And time again in Genesis, the authors are trying to get attention that this God is different. We read in Noah and the Ark, this God's different. He says, I'm never going to do this again. He makes a promise. We see with Adam and Eve, instead of saying, you stupid humans, God says, you are good. I couldn't think of a better word than stupid. That's like the limit of my vocabulary. What's a strong word? I know, stupid. So time and time again, this God shows up in very different ways than how people perceive gods to behave. And think about it. God shows up to her. God chases her in the wilderness. But who's her? Who's Hagar? Hagar is an enslaved, oppressed, abused, brown, runaway, pregnant girl. And that's who God shows up for. In our mind, we think of, well, God did speak to Abram. Patriarchy, right? He holds all the power and he has all the blessing. He shows up to the beautiful people like Sarah. Gods don't chase runaway, pregnant, enslaved people. You'd think God just let those people just go off to die. Like, you don't want the system. You don't want the best of this. You don't want this perfect order. Then get gone, right? And just let her, she chose her own path. Let her get what was due to her, right? But God shows up and notices people who are different. And this is so critically important because there's probably a lot of us here who feel overlooked, who feel tolerated, who feel like I don't belong, I don't fit, and we're just gonna let the beautiful people go with the beautiful people and they'll continue to win while I just get like seventh or eighth best. But here's a story at the very beginning. It says God sees her and she names God. The same way my friend named Sprinkle Cheese, because the way that she feels how cheese works, it's sprinkled. If through this woman's experience, she says, no, this is a God who sees people like me. And I want everyone to know that this is a God who sees people like me. And friends, that changes everything. Because the whole gospel, the whole good news, it's so easy to think of, no, it's only good news when I perform, when I act, when I know all the right things, and I don't screw it up. Then, only then do I get the notice from God. Then do I get the attention and the love of God. And the truth is, this love and this benevolent God is everywhere, including in you, not just later, but right now. And it's so easy for us to put words to saying, I am saved, that I am blessed, that I am good, if. And that's not the gospel. It's not if. It's now. This benevolent God loves you now and sees you now. So here's just three takeaways. Then we'll wrap this up. And I have to remember what they are. Oh, yeah. First one is that they're all really good, trust me. the first one is this, is that if you're in the wild, embrace it. You cannot manufacture going into the wilderness, and you can't manufacture walking out of it. And you might be in it for, I met with a family who went through just a complete hellish experience. And they looked at me and they said, when is it going to be normal? I'm like, never, right? It's never going to be normal again. Because we want to go back to some point of where we deemed it was good, or is deemed it was holy, or we deemed it was right, or we deemed it was easy. And you can't go back because that was then and you are now. And who you are now is not a lesser version of who you are now. It means you're just in a different space, but you are still beautiful and strong. and loved. So if you think that's normal, it's never going to happen again. What's normal now is that you are in a horrible place and it is hard and you're going to cry yourself to sleep probably for a long time, and you are still loved and you still matter and you still have value. And when you experience the good things and the highs of your life, you are still deeply loved and have value. So when you're in the wilderness, embrace it. And how do you know if you're in the wilderness? Let me tell you, I can tell you this, right? We had our small group and Lindsay Sykes shared, and it was wonderful. And she said, I got to a place of where I felt untethered. I just was not connected to whatever spirituality was or whatever community looked like, whatever my value system, my belief system. It was like everything was in the air. I felt untethered. And I thought, that is a perfect word for it. And being untethered doesn't mean that I'm like floating off into space. I don't know where I'm going to go. It just means what grounded me for no longer grounds me. And it feels scary. If you've been there or you are there, when you don't know what side is up and what side's down, it feels really, really, because we're used to certainty. We're used to, like, no, I know exactly where I'm at and how I'm feeling, what's the right way to perform. And there's moments in life you just don't. And it's okay. I gave a message on this several weeks ago that it's, you have to be able to say what you know to be true, what you know is love, and say it often when you're in these places. But trust that when you're in the wilderness, that you're okay. There's something new to be learned. There's something new to be experienced. And those moments for me, I can look back. I can look back even like 5 months ago, right? And the things that I experienced were so incredibly hard, but I'm so thankful for it because it's where I'm at today. And I feel more free. I feel more loved. I feel like in such a great space. But that wilderness was hard, but it led me to something good. Second thing is this, embrace it. And look for the divine, because the divine sees you. In the wilderness, God is not just around that tree, he's not just like across that stream or wherever it might be. That God is there, right there in that moment. And so often we miss it. You can experience the divine ever. You can experience this divine in a yoga pose, at a table with friends laughing, through a great book called Name of the Wind. Right? I'm going to lean heavy on that one. You can experience it through eating soft meat. You can experience it everywhere if you're willing to at least keep your head up and see. I was on, I don't know if I said this recently, but you're welcome again because it's so good. So I was at this place called the Sucker River, and I hiked up it, and I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the water, the river just flow, and it was beautiful, and it was loud, and I felt like God spoke to me. I believe that God speaks to us. And I felt like God saying, it's easy to get caught up in what is coming, what is going, what's coming, what's going. I felt like God say, look up and see what's always been there. I looked up and I saw the sky, and it was beautiful. I just had this moment of like, it's so easy for me just to watch, oh, God's here, now it's gone. Oh, I'm experiencing good, now it's bad, right? And it's true, those things are gonna happen. Things are gonna change, life is gonna happen, and it's good and it is hard and all of it is holy. But there's something that has always been and will always be. Look for the divine. And last is where I end is this, is look for others. It is in the wilderness, it's in these spaces that we can notice one another. And being seen, you know what it's like to be seen? You know what it feels like to be validated, to be noticed as you're walking through something? It is the most life-giving thing to realize you're not alone. And here's the idea. The idea of noticing other people in the wilderness, what we usually want to do is like have all the answers. Like, oh, just do A, B, and C, then you get D. Yeah, I just rescued you. Come out of the wilderness with me, right? Or just read this book. Listen to this podcast. Pray this way, whatever it might be. It's like, that is not our job. We want to rescue people because that's like part of what God does, right? And we want to manufacture it. It's like what Sarah did. Let's just make the blessing happen now, not later. Here's the thing. Simple head nod, a simple text that's saying, I see you, a hug, a nice letter. Those are life-giving. Here's for me. And this, I will end after this, I promise. When we transitioned out of the movement that we were previously in into Neighborhood Church, we had a series of meetings, and they were hard because these are people, and something I don't often talk about, these are people who I sat in their house and cried with them. People I celebrated their anniversaries. People celebrated their babies being born, right? People who challenged and encouraged me and the circumstance events. And if you've never heard the story, I'd love to take you out for coffee. We could talk more about it. But in these meetings, I didn't know where everyone's going to land of transitioning into Neighborhood Church. And there's people, as you can imagine, that were frustrated, that were angry, as they should be, right? There's a lot of people who are excited, a lot of people who were like, here, who are like, we love, we always thought we're going this direction, we're going to continue going this direction. But I didn't know where everyone was at. And I said at the end of those meetings, if you are going to leave, like, we bless you, we love you. Like, our goal in our church was never like, we're the only God-ordained church in Minnesota, so you better get here to get the best. It's like, there's so many beautiful spaces. All we ask is we shake hands so we can leave in a blessing, leave in saying, I see you. Even though I said that, people would come up and shake my hand. I'm like, oh, not you too, right? That's hard. And this one guy came up to me at the end. It was like our fifth meeting, and I was, it was just hard. And he walked up to me, and I'm like, oh, no, not you too. He walked up, put my hand up, looked in the eyes, and he just came up and gave me a big hug. And he's a big dude who does not hug. Right? I'm not a big hugger. He, I would say even more, is not a hugger. And he just hugged me, and I began to cry. Because in that moment, he saw something in me that said, I want to go and see Chris. I want to go, I'm going to hug. Two men that don't hug are going to hug for like 15 seconds because he wanted to make sure that he let me know, I see you. And it was one of the most beautiful gifts I received in that time. So keep your head up. Look for the divine. Look for one another, how we can show up in love and speak love, because it can make a huge difference. Let's stand up. Let's pray. Vir Lahai Roy, the God who sees. So if you're here today, and even, it's like I'm processing on stage. You're here and you're like, I've done this, Chris. I have cried out to God. I have said, God, don't you see me? It's like not this new idea to pray and saying, God, I feel lonely. Yeah. If you're here, like we are here in this space together and you have value and a worth and you are not alone. And this God deeply loves you. It is messy. It is complicated. It is not an easy straight path thing. But if you are here again, as I pray, I'm going to encourage you just to receive it. Receive this encouragement, receive this life of a God who sees you. Let's pray. So God, that's our prayer, that you see us in the same way like you spoke to Hagar. So where are you going? I pray for my friends who feel lonely, who feel hurt, who feel isolated, who feel distant, who feel down. My friends who feel jacked, excited, feel like they've never been better, and everything in between. I pray, God, that you would come again and speak to us, and that your words would move to a place of hope, of joy, of life, especially to my friends who just feel like they're in the wilderness. They had a run. The system didn't work. I did everything right. That you still notice the oppressed. You still notice a pregnant, enslaved, runaway girl. And I pray for that last part, that we'd be able to see one another, that we'd be able to show up in love, and we'd be able to speak words of truth, of freedom, of hope, and of encouragement. And I thank you for this community. For the last 4 years, we've been doing that. And I pray we'll continue to do that. And we love you. Amen. So thank you, friends, for being in this space. I'm going to invite our ministry team up to the front. And like I love saying this. If you're new here, and the idea of like coming up the front in front of everyone else just sounds asinine. I'm like, people are going to pray for me in front of other people? Yeah, that's what we do. we're those people. And here's the thing. You could check a box, have a phone call, but there's also people here. They're not counselors. They're not going to shame you. They're going to hear you, and they're going to ask God to do good things in your life. That's it. So feel free to come up and get prayer for anything you'd like. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and go Vikings.